This week's Parashat Toldos, discusses the Leda of Yaakov and Esav. And even before Yaakov and Esav were born, the Pasuk tells us, Perachot Hei, Pasuk Chof Aleph, Vayeta Yitzchok LaShem Lenoichach Ishto Ki Akorihi. And Yitzchok davens, the Targum Taishas, the word Vayetar Yitzchok, and Yitzchok davens to Ribbono Shel Olam, because Rivka wasn't Akor, wasn't able to have children. But Rashi is bothered, what's the lashon of Vayetar? It's an interesting choice of a word to explain Tfilo. Says Rashi, Hirbo the Hitzir B'Tfilo. Yitzchok Avinu Hirbe. He davened very much, the Hitzir, and very strongly. He was persistent in his Tfilo, in order to reach his goal, until finally, says Rashi, the Ribbono Shel Olam listened to him, the Spatzev and his Bayes, and then Vatar Rivki Ishtoi. So right away here at the beginning of the parasha, we have a tremendous lesson. Because many times we think that if we daven once, or perhaps twice, or perhaps three times, for a specific request, and we don't see our tefillahs being answered, we think we have done our share. However, even Yitzchok Avinu, who Yitzchok we know is the one from the Avos that is the Midah of Avodah, he was the Korban, and he was brought out by his father as a Korban. He represents Avodah Hashem. And still, when he came to David, it wasn't so simple. He wasn't answered right away, and even this was something that he needed very much. It was a request that he needed to be granted because he wanted to have children in order to continue Klal Yisrael. And Afilu Achi, nonetheless, it wasn't easy for him. He had to be hirba v'hipster v'tfilo. He had to daven very much, very strongly, in order to, for Ribbono Shel Olam to grant his request. And this teaches us that even if a person davens once or twice, he has to keep on davening. But could be when we start thinking about this a little further, we think that every tfilo is lost, but perhaps we can give a mashal. If, let's say, there's a company that wants to bid on a project, and the city puts out bids. They want to build a tremendous project, a group of buildings, and different companies have to put in bids. And in order to bid for this big project, it takes tremendous investments of time and money. And there was a company that decided to try to enter a bid, but they didn't have the funds to do all the planning, the engineering reports, and environmental reports that will be necessary to present to the city in order to win the bid. So they present, they go to an investor, and they tell the investor, listen, we're working on a project, and we want to invest, and would you go and give us seed money for this investment, and if we win the bid, it's a tremendous opportunity to make 10 times the amount of our investment. So the investor goes and puts his money in, and it goes through, and this company is a very good company, and they take their job seriously, and they start preparing the reports, and they're spending a lot of money, because in order, this is a tremendous project, and they have to do all hire all types of engineers, and it takes them a year and 2 years, and after 2 years' time, their investor comes back to them, and he wants his profits, he wants to see what's happening, tell him, sorry, there's no profits yet. He says, okay, I'll give you a little more time. And he comes back after another year or two, and it's already 4 years into there, and he spent a tremendous amount of money. An investor wants his profits. And they say, sorry, we don't have any profits yet. So the investor says he's pulling out. He's pulling out. He doesn't want to give any more money because his investment obviously went sour. And the CEO of the company turns to the investor and says, I don't understand what you're saying. This was an investment that the profits of the investment are only going to be realized once we win the bid. But every dollar that you put in is not wasted. Every dollar you put in is working towards this goal of trying to go and win the bid. So if you're going to pull out now, then all will be lost. But if you'll keep on, you'll stay with us, and you'll go a little further, we're almost at the end. If you give us a little more money, then our investment can come to fruition, and we can make 10 times the amount. So the same thing is true with tefillah. It's not the pshat that we daven and maybe that original tefillah is lost, and when we're here by the hipster, then the last tefillah was a better tefillah, was a more important tefillah, was a stronger tefillah, and therefore it worked. But rather, hipster by tefillah, it took a tremendous amount of tefillah, the culmination of effort of all these tefillahs together that Yitzchok was mispalel until Yitzchok was zoicha to reach his goal. So that's a tremendous idea When we daven, we're not Yidden. This is Yitzchak Avinu, who still needed tremendous amounts of tefillah to reach his goal. And interestingly, the Yonasan ben Uziel tells us that Yitzchak didn't just daven in his own house. The Targum says that Yitzchak went with Tavar Puchana. He went to the place, Har Moriah, the place where his father brought him as a korban. He invested a tremendous effort in his tefillah, that he decided that his tefillah would be more answered in the Makom HaMikdash, in the place where he had offered himself as a korban. He didn't just daven from his own ass. He invested a tremendous effort, and then finally he was answered, and the Targum said that he was able with his tefillah to change Kaviyakol, the mind of the Rebbeinu Shloimeh, that the tefillah of Yitzchak helped, but it was originally a gzeirah. Ki akorehi, that's the way Rivka was supposed to be. And through the tefillah of Yitzchak was by Yosser Loi Hashem, by Tar Rivka Ishtar. That's a tremendous idea, a chizik in tefillah. The pasuk continues, the next pasuk, by Yisroisitsu Habonim Bikirbo. And there was a tremendous battle, Rivka, because Batar Rivka Ishtar Rivka became pregnant, and now by Yisroisitsu Habonim Bikirbo. There was some sort of battle going on. She was wondering what's going on. Rashi tells us, the famous Rashi, that she passed a Beis Medrash, and there was a Ritzu of the child's trying to come out, and she passed a Beis Avodah Zarah, and there was also the child was coming down. She was confused. She was wondering, what's the pshat in this child? Batoimirim came, Lomo Zeh Anoichi Batelech Lidroi Shes Hashem. And she went to seek out the Rabbanim Shom to try to understand pshat and what's occurring. And Rashi tells us what's Batelech Lidroi Shes Hashem. She went with Beis Midrash Oshashem. She went to Shem to try to find out what is happening. And then she got Gilo, Rashi says, Matei B'Soifer, what's going on? And then by Yoimah Hashem, Lord, the Rebbeinu Shlom replied to her through Shem, the Ruach HaKodesh, with the response. So we can ask a question over here as follows. Rivka Imenu was looking for guidance. She was trying to understand the situation in front of her. What is going on? So she goes to Shem. We would give a muscle. Rebbeinu Kanievsky, Aleh HaShalom. She would have a question. Who would she turn to? Maybe she would go to her father, to Rabbi Yashav, and tell. Maybe she would ask her husband, Chaim. Would she go to someone else and not seek their guidance and ask someone else about a perplexing question that she had? So Rivka, why is it about Telech, Lidvash, and Hashem? Rashi says, the Beis Midrash shall shame. She ran to a stranger to shame to find out what's going on over here, and she didn't ask her husband, Yitzchak. She didn't ask her father-in-law, Avram. And they were Nevi'im. And really, shame seems to be even a smaller madrega. Shame's response came through Ruach HaKodesh, which is a lower level than Nevuah. Avram was a Navi. Yitzchak was a Navi. So why didn't he ask? She asked them. The Sifrei Chachamim asked half of this question. And he asked, Ve'ein Lahakshis, you could ask, why did she not go to Avram? Because Avram was a Navi, so why did she, doesn't ask the question of why didn't she ask Yitzchak, but he asked the question of why didn't she go ask Avram. And he says as follows, he says, we know Chazal tell us that Avram was supposed to live an extra 5 years, and Avram was Mifter 5 years younger, because he shouldn't see Esav Yotzel et Harbus Ro. He shouldn't see Esav going off on the wrong path. When Esav and Yaakov were young, they both were on the right path, and Esav only veered off later on. So therefore, Avram was Nifter earlier, so he shouldn't see it. He was promised to have Seba, a good old age, and he shouldn't see Esav going the wrong way. So explains the Sifrei Chachamim, if Rivka would approach Avram for her dilemma, and then Avram would have had a nevuah that there's going to be two children here, and they're not going to be equal. And like the Pasuk's going to tell us, Virab Yavon Sir, the older one is going to have to serve the younger one, Yaakov Avinu, is going to be the Iker, and Esav is going to be subservient to Yaakov. And that would lead Avram to the conclusion that Esav is already not on the right path. And Avram Avinu was not supposed to know this piece of information. So therefore, the Rebbeinu Shlom is misabed. The Rebbeinu Shlom put the idea into Rivka's head not to approach Avram. It means really the question is a valid question. B'derech HaTeva, normally she should have approached Avram. But since Avram was not supposed to go and know this answer, because then he's going to know Esav's true colors, so therefore, Rivka did not go and approach Avram. However, he only asked the first half of the question. He only asked, why didn't he go and approach Avram? But But the question still remains good. So she's not going to go to Avram because Avram's not supposed to know Esav's outcome. What about Yitzchak? Why couldn't she go to Yitzchak? Yitzchak's going to live with Esav past the age of when he was Yitzchak Tarbisro. He lived many years knowing Esav. So what would be wrong if he's going to hear and learn about Esav a little earlier? So perhaps we can explain as follows. As the Pasuk says a little later, that there was a big machloikas between Yitzchak and Rivka. The Pasuk says, Vayeav Yitzchak es Esav, he signed it to, that Yitzchak had a avot to Esav, and Rivka a heves es Yaakov. And Rivka on the other side loved Yaakov. There seemed to be a machloikas, Yitzchak and Rivka, which son they should favor. And the question is, what was the cause of this machloikas? Why did Yitzchak hold one way, and why did Rivka hold the other way? So the Rashbam says a fascinating idea, that this machloikas wasn't, all the information wasn't really fair on the table. Rivka had a piece of information that Yitzchak did not have, because or else it's very difficult to understand why did Rivka have the view of Yaakov different than Yitzchak, and Yitzchak had one view of Esav, and Rivka had a different view. The answer explains the Rashbam is that Rivka heard a nevuah. Rivka many years earlier when she was still pregnant with these two children, she was perplexed by their outcome. And therefore right then before they were born, she already went to Shem and asked him to ask the Rebbein Shlom what is going on with these children. And she already had a response before they were born that there's going to be Shnei Le'umim. There's going to be two nations, Mimayachi Paredu, and they won't be the same. The Rav Yavon Sawyer and the older one, Esav, is going to have to be subservient to the younger one. So as soon as her children were born, she already knew that they're not equal. She already knew the Rav Yavon Sawyer. And since she had this piece of information, this Nebuah, therefore, she had a different approach to Yaakov and Esav. However, Yitzchak had never heard this Nebuah, and obviously Rivka never said it over to Yitzchak. And therefore, he had a different approach and had a look at Yitzchak and Esav, Yaakov and Esav. So if this is the case, it would be very understandable. We could say a similar teretz to what the Sifrei Chachamim answered to the question. Because we wanted to know why didn't Rivka approach Yitzchak? Because obviously Yitzchak was not supposed to know this Nevuah. Because whatever reason the Rebbein Yishlom wanted that the brachas should be offered to Esav. And the reason why the brachas were offered to Esav was because Yitzchak oyeves Esav. Yitzchak had a bigger ava to Esav, and that's why he offered him the brachas. So that only happened because he didn't have this piece of information, this Nebuah. He never heard the Nebuah of Rav Yavik Sawyer. And therefore, he went and favored Esav over Yaakov. And therefore, the story of the parish is going to carry out, and he's going to attempt to give the brachas to Esav, and Yaakov's going to come and steal the brachas, and that's going to create a tremendous sin of Ayisa. And the Pasuk says after, in the end of the parish, that Esav had tremendous hatred towards Yaakov, which we know that throughout the Golos, throughout the history of Klal Yisrael, is a fundamental sin of Esav Soines Yaakov. This is something that is a fundamental part of our history. And when did this happen? What caused this sinner? When did this sinner go into Esav's heart so much that he wanted to kill Yaakov, something that remains halachi, Esav, Soines, Yaakov? Where did that come from? That came from this whole story that the brachas were offered really to Esav, and Yaakov came in the last moment and took them away. And then right away, as soon as Esav realized what happened, the Pasuk tells us in Pasuk Chav Zayin, Perachon Zayin passing them out by Yistim Esav et Yaakov ala brocha asher bercho avim. It's clear in the Torah that the cause of the sin of this everlasting sin of Esav Soines Yaakov that he wants right away to kill Yaakov, it was created, it was nurtured from this event that there was a brocha that was supposed to be offered to Esav and was taken away from him at the last moment. So really, this whole story, if we want, just like the Sifrei Chachamim says, that the Rebbein Yishlom is misabeh, the Rebbein Yishlom caused, that Rivka did not turn to Esav. Rivka didn't turn to Avram Avinu to question about my Yisroitzu Abon and Bekirba, because Avram Avinu wasn't supposed to know the answer, because he wasn't supposed to know about Esav's results, about Esav is Yotz L'Tarbis Ro. So perhaps we could say the same thing is true about Yitzchak. Yitzchak was not supposed to know the true colors of Esav. Yitzchak was supposed to be Oyev is Esav, because then he would go and offer the brachas to Esav, and Yaakov would have to come and take them, and that would be the setup of Yisroim Esav as Yaakov, which is really something that plays out, that we see Hakol Kol Yaakov by Yadayim De Esav, and this is how Esav and Yaakov go through the history of always Yaakov is sort of held in check. It's really a toiva for Yaakov that Esav is always there to hold us in check. At any time we start falling, we know right away Esav is there. The Yadayim Yidei Esav is always there. And sort of that protects Klal Yisrael. They shouldn't fall too far, because if they fall too far right away, Esav is there to put them back in their place. So this could be, as Netchilas right away when they were born, this is already, this is being set up. Rashi tells us, the Pasuk says, also here at the beginning of the parasha, it says, "Vayisroitzu habonim bekirbo." Like we said, Rivka was had a dilemma, and Rashi says the second shot, "Misroitzu zem zeh umiriven." They were fighting with each other. A tremendous idea. Yaakov and Esav weren't even born yet, but they were so fundamentally different. Yaakov was Yaakov and Esav was Esav even before they came to this world, before they were born. There was a fight. There was a battle that replays itself, like we said, constantly through history, as Esav has a role and Yaakov has a role, and they're fundamentally different. And this difference already was nicker when they were still B'nai Imoy. They were still in their mother's stomach. They weren't even born yet, and they were already fighting. And Ramban clearly tells us this wasn't by accident, but the lashon of Ramban is also mitzchilas yitzirasa meriva. The Rebbein Shem made at the beginning of their birth, at the beginning, not even their birth, their beginning of their creation, when they weren't even born, a meriva, a battle. Remez, Ramashiyah, B'nai, and Besoik. This is a remez what's going to happen, Esav and Yaakov, throughout the history. The Rebbein Shem was showing over here this by Yisroitzu Rabbonim Bekirba, that Esav and Yaakov do not coexist. And Esav and Yaakov is Yaakov, and as soon as they were ready, Yitzira, right away when they were formed, even before they were born, there was a battle going on. Now what exactly is this battle? What exactly is the tachlis of Esav, and what is the tachlis of Yaakov? This is a very big yisoid in this week's parasha to try to understand, because obviously our role is to follow the role of Yaakov as opposed to following the role of Esav. And as soon as they're born, really, they're born very different, which would make a lot of sense, because if Esav has one specific role and Yaakov has a different role, Mitzchilas Yitzirot, like we said, even Me'imoy they were fighting. As soon as they're born, the Torah makes a big mention to tell us they looked physically very different. Like the Pasuk tells us in Pasuk Chafhei, Vayetze Harishon Admoini. And the first child comes out red, Kuloi Kaderes Seir. He's full of hair, he's like a talus of hair. Very unnatural occurrence for a baby to be born full of hair. And therefore, right away, because this unnatural occurrence, how he was born, it seemed to lead by Yikru Shemoy Esav, that everyone there, Hakol Korim Lekein, Rashi says, it was such an unusual baby that was born. Kakuloi Kaderes Seir, he's a fully developed child, that he has already a full amount of hair. So everyone was wondering about such a child, and therefore, by Yikru Shemoy Esav, everyone around him, Dr. Ashi, called him Esav, and the name stuck. So obviously this name of Esav, with the ideal of Kuloi Kaderes Seir, is an integral part of Esav's Messias, of his makeup, of his goals, of who he really was. And that's why the name that the Torah gives him, and everyone sort of gave him at that time, and the name that sticks to Esav is Esav. And by Yaakov was being born also with a very unnatural occurrence. The Acher came Yotze Achim, his brother comes right out. The Yodoyechezes Bakev Esav, and right when he's born, he's holding on to the heel of Esav. And again, by Yiku Shemo Yaakov. And because of this occurrence, the Ekev holding on to the heel, Yaakov gets his name of Esav, of Yaakov, he gets his name, and the question, who called him this name? So Rashi says, could be Yitzchak called him this name, could be the Rebbein Shlomo called him this name, Atem Krisom Charkom Shein, could be the Rebbein Shlomo himself called him this name of Yaakov. The Baal Turim says the Gemashia by Yikos Avram Avinu gave its name to Yaakov. But again, Yaakov's name seems to be a name that has to fit in. And this name was given maybe by the Rebbeinu Shloimeh, maybe by Yitzchok Avram, and they all call him Yaakov. Why? Why did he get this name? Because of a occurrence at his birth that he's holding on to the Akev Esav, he's holding on to Esav's heel. So obviously these names are not just simple occurrences, but as soon as they're being born, their whole mahus, their whole of who they will be, they're being defined by the events of their birth, and therefore their names, which define them, are given to them based on the occurrences of their birth, as Esav is the one who's kuloi kaderet seir vayikru shmoi Esav, as Rashi says, he's nasa benigmar, he's already complete, Esav is in lashon hasiyah, he was already completed at his birth, and Yaakov is the one who's akev eis, he's holding on to the heel. So how can we understand, on a maybe a deeper understanding, these events, the names of Yaakov and Esav? So the fascinating Kliyoker over here, where the Kliyoker tells us that these names and the way they appeared at their birth was really the fundamental definition of Yaakov and Esav. And he explains as follows. He explains that Esav was nigmar. Esav was complete. He was born complete because his tachlis is Olam Hazeh. Olam Hazeh chelkoi v'goyrelon. His chelek, his purpose, Esav's purpose, is a purpose to be an Olam Hazeh. And an Olam Hazeh, what a person really needs for Olam Hazeh is his physical development. His physical development, so therefore Esav was created, developed. His physically, he was already developed, kuloi kaderet seir, he looked like already a full-grown person in his hair. He didn't have to develop. He came with his physical koyches already developed. And really, every person, when they're born, in terms of their physical koyches, already is born that a person could eat, a person could drink, the physical person breathes. The basic ideas of what a human being needs for his physical needs, as soon as a baby's born, he's oise, he's asiya, he's made. However, when we talk about the sichlius, the ruchnius, the kakoichus, a person has a neshama that has to develop, he has a seichel, he has a mind, he has the koyach hadibur, he has to speak. A baby doesn't really think. A baby doesn't go and talk. A baby has to develop these koiches. So every person has two parts to him. He has the physical part of him, which is ready nigmar, which is complete. And then he has the seichel, the ruchniyistika koiches that has to develop. A baby doesn't think, a baby cries when his physical needs are not being met. He doesn't think that maybe I should wait, I shouldn't wake up my mother in the middle of the night. He doesn't think like that. He feels that he's hungry, and right away he cries out for his physical needs. When a person gets a little older, they develop their mind, and therefore they don't just cry out when they need food, but they can wait for a proper time, they could train themselves to have a meal time. Their physical needs are not just so overpowering that they just cry out and say, give me now. However, a baby that doesn't have these development, his mental capabilities are not developed, all he could express is his physical needs, and right away he'll call out whatever he needs something, no matter what time of day or night it is, that's all he could be. And the Kliyoker tells us further that really Chazal tells Shor ben Yoimai Kori Shor, that's also not just by a person's physical needs, but a behema, when he's born, is really cool, sharp, and yoimli kari shar, that an animal is already developed, much more even than a person, because an animal is just really a physical bria, and therefore the koichas are already developed. So he explains that's why Esav was miloshen asiya, Esav was nigmar, he was already born complete, because Esav's purpose is a limited to olam hazeh. So his physical koichas are the overpowering koichas that existed within him. So right away when he was born developed in his physical koichas. Because this is the overpowering part of Esav that's expressing itself right away when he's born. And therefore he was born developed, he's miloshen asiya, he's made, he's done, he's complete. However, Yaakov, he says, is miloshen ekev, miloshen soif. Ekev is the bottom of the person, it's the end, it's the development, it's the ruchis, it's the mental capabilities of a person that have to develop, because Yaakov's Iker Tachlis is Oilam HaBol, he's developing, he's trying to grow bigger and bigger, he's being Oila, bigger and bigger. The Shleimus HaMa'ulah is Ma'at Ma'at, he says. When a person wants to develop himself, it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a step-by-step development. And that's how a person is Ruchin Sticker Koiches. It is mental kids. His neshama has to develop through him. A person, the more he understands, the more he could understand. And he says the ikar of a person steiging, he keeps on going as he gets older and older. And really, besides yom, is when the person is really fully developed. A person that's a ruchniyistik, a person, is not developed when he's born, but rather as he goes through life, he develops more and more. Talmidei chacham, as they get older, they develop more and more. A person's zaken is developed more and more. Why zesha kana chachma? He's more and more developing. Because that's the idea of Akev Esau, of Akev, that Yaakov is the soif, is the heel, is the end of a person, the end is the development of the person, and that's the ikur of Yaakov. So that's how the Kli Yaakov explains to us, there's a fundamental difference between Yaakov and Esau, that Yaakov was so much to develop himself, and Esau was really the way he was made. And he says, really, he says, you should look back to what he said in Parashas Bereishis. And he says a tremendous thought over there, that in the Bria Sa'olim, we know in Parashat Bereishis, the Torah tells us on each creation, Vayar Elokim Ki Tov, and it keeps on telling us that it was Tov, it was good, and the idea of Tov is complete. But by Adam, the purpose of the whole world was the creation of Adam, the Torah doesn't say the word Tov. And the reason being is, he explains, because a person is not complete. Toiv means he's sholem, he's beautiful, he's great, he's the way he should be. A behemoth when he's born is ready complete. The rabbis can say it's exactly the way I want him. This elephant is fully developed in how an elephant should be. So vayara lekin ki toiv. But in the Odom, the whole Iker is the Tachlis, is the Shleimus that he's going to develop throughout his life. The rabbis is not ready to define a person when he's born as toiv because everything is a development. So therefore we see that Yaakov and Esav had different roles in Tchilas B'Yosam right when they were created. That's what the Kli Yaakov expresses. And really we see that the Torah really gives us a beautiful example of this difference between Esav and Yaakov right away at the beginning of the parasha, the first story really, if we call it, in the first interaction between Esav and Yaakov. But the Torah tells us, Maisa, that Esav comes home running, Halitaini no mina oidam ha'om ha'zeki, oyif anoichi. This idea that we just expressed, that when a baby is born and he cries out that he needs food without thinking, without wondering, just give me, I'm hungry. Esav expressed this idea when he wasn't a baby anymore. By Yoimer Esav El Yaakov, just how he's painting, no, just give me food, min ha'odam ha'odam ha'zeh, this red food, I just need it. He oyif anoichi, I'm mamish hungry, I'm tired and I'm hungry, I just need. Al-Kain Korosh Mayezim, and again the Torah gives us that this defined him. He got a name from such a story. Why did he get a name from such a story? It was one day event. He came one day and he was hungry and he asked for some food. The Torah says, no, Al-Kain Korosh Shemoy Edom. This was a defining moment in Esav's life. This defined Esav of who he was. This was the essence of Esav. Esav was someone who only lived for Olam Hazeh, Halitaini Nom in Olam Hazeh. And therefore the Ramban tells us that when Esav went and sold the Bechira to Yaakov, he came in, the Yaakov Notan LeEsav Lechem was Nadoshim by Yoichel, by Yoish, by Yochum, by Yela. He just ate and he drank and he walked out. That's what he needed to do, and he took care of his physical needs. By Yibez Esav Esav Bechira. And Esav was Mavaza. He cheapened the idea of Bechira. And the Ramban explains that what was this idea of Esav cheapening the Bechira? The idea was that the Bechira is aim of Bechira, Shum Maim of Lakarak, Achreya Av. The way the Ramban explains that right now the Bechira wasn't worth anything. Because Bechira is something that helps a person, Achar Mises Adiv. Either he'll get a bigger chelik of Yerusha and inherit a bigger share, or he'll take over the role of Yitzhak Avinu. The Bechira's job was to fill the role of his father. But Esav looked at the moment. Esav was living in the present, explains the Ramban.
Ki ein chepes b'ksilin rak sheyoichu v'yishtu v'yasu chepsam b'itom. Lo yechoshu lo yoimachu. He didn't want to be bothered with the thought process to try to think and understand of what's going to be tomorrow. What is b'chayr going to lead me to? What could I gain? What will I have from it? The only thing Esau was able to see was what was in front of his eyes. He understood he was hungry and he understood that he needed to eat. And that's where Esau's understanding ended. And therefore, the Bechayr, which would take a thought process, would take an understanding, which would take these mental capabilities to understand and think, and rather push away his physical needs of the moment to think of what is going to be, what could I gain, that was beyond Esau's scope. This idea, again, that the baby just says, give me what I need right now, and I don't want to have to think. A baby can't think, but that's really what the Torah is describing here, that Esau just came in, only felt the need of the moment, and he just saw, Vayoichol, Vayesh, Vayokom, Vayelech. He just ate, drank, and was done. All he had was in front of his eyes, and therefore, says Ramban, that's the bizoyim. That's a bizoyim to the Bechayra, that he couldn't appreciate something that takes ability to wait, something that has to be developed, something that takes an investment of time that is going to eventually be worth something to you. And even though that eventuality is going to be much more than your present needs, that was beyond the scope of Esau. And that, the Ramban says, is the way fools act, is they just look at what's in front of their eyes. They can't go past. Rak yoichlu v'yishtu v'yasu chepsam v'itom. They're just really focusing on what's in front of their eyes. They can't think and wonder and be mavakish for anything past them. This is what we're trying to explain, a fundamental difference between Yaakov and Esau. And this is really a lesson for us, because really that's what the Yetzirah always really tells us. That's the Moses Farm explains to us the Yetzirah's goal is really just to make us forget and not think about the long-term ramifications of our actions, but rather just to focus on what's in front of our eyes and tichbar avoda. Don't think so much, don't wonder, don't try to develop yourself, don't try to plan, don't try to shtag, don't try to grow. Just look what's in front of your eyes, look at the moment, and deal with what your physical needs are at the moment. That's the idea of the Yetzirah, and this is really what Esau's approach to life. But Yaakov is the one who's the other way, Bakev the Esau. He's always looking at the future, he's looking down the road, he's looking for his development, he's looking for where he could grow, even if in the present moment maybe it's going to be difficult. He's looking past the present moment. He's not focusing on just what's in front of his eyes. He's looking long term to the Olam Haba, and that's the focus of Yaakov, the focus of Yaakov as opposed to the focus of Esau. The Chafetz Chaim brings this out, this a similar idea as follows, also in these very few psukim, because he says that look what happened to Esau. Esau comes running in for the field, and he says, Vayomer Esav, hine anoichi hoylich lomos. I'm going to die. The lomos eli b'chayros. You're telling me something called b'chayra? B'chayra has tremendous milus. I would gain so much by holding on to the b'chayra. But anyway, I'm hoylich lomos. I'm gonna die. So why you bother me with the b'chayra? So Chafetz Chaim says like this, Pashup Shad is Esav was saying, that listen, I'm anyway going to die one day, so why should I worry about the Bechayra? So Chafetz Chaim says, but think about what a tzaddik when he thinks about Yom HaMisa. The Gemara tells us that if a person is faced by Yetzer Hara, he should try to be Isaac B'Torah is one of the things. And if everything else fails, the Gemara tells us he should be Yisker Yom HaMisa. He should remember that one day there's going to be an Olam Haba, and one day he's not going to be the Olam Haz anymore, and that could help a person fight his Yetzer Hara. Says the Chafetz Chaim, we have the same person, the tzaddik and the Rosh, are expressing the same thought, and they're coming to a different conclusion. Esau says, I'm not going to have long-term benefits anyway, so let me just, so why are you bothering me to focus on the future, on what I'm going to gain, on the long-term developments and gains of Bechayra? Well, I'm anyway not going to have it for that long. And says the Chafetz Chaim, the tzaddik goes the other way. The tzaddik says, Baker, it's the opposite. If I'm hoylich lomos, let me not live in the present. Let me build for the future. So this fundamental idea of Esav and Yaakov, a tzaddik and a rosh, how they approach life differently. Where Esav says that I'm not going to worry about what's going to be. He needs a holich lomus. So anyway, let me not just think about what's going to be later. Because anyway, what am I going to have later? So I'll just focus on the present and therefore lomus zeli b'chayr. What's the b'chayr going to do for me? But says the Chavetz Chaim that a tzaddik is just the opposite. When he thinks about his development, when he thinks about the Yom HaMisa, it pushes him the other way. It pushes him to try to ask and ask my praiser. He tries to think that Olam HaZeh is just helping him to develop to the Olam Haba, and he takes a different approach than Esav. Later on, the parasha tells us that Yitzchak decides he's going to give the brachas to Esav. Now, it's very difficult to understand, and Mepharshim try to explain, is what exactly, why did Yitzchak want to go and give the brachas to Esav? Because even if we say that Yitzchak maybe had a different approach than Rivka, and he was a heavis as Esav, and even though Esav maybe he knew or didn't know the full extent of Esav, but shouldn't he have known who Yaakov was? Shouldn't he have known who Esav was? So why was it that Yitzchak is offering the brachas to Esav until Yaakov comes at the last moment and takes them away? The Malbim has an approach as follows to understand this difficult question. And he says like this, he says that really Yitzchak understood who Yaakov was and who Esav was. And he understood they weren't the same, he understood they were very fundamentally different as we're trying to explain. But rather, if you look at the brachas that he was offering, he wasn't really offering brachas of what the full development of Klal Yisrael is going to be. We know this Birchas Avram. Avram was gebenched that his Zarei, his children are going to be the ones who are going to be the Am Hashem. And this was not the bracha that he was offering to Esau. Because when Yaakov, at the end of the day, takes the brachas that were meant for Esav, all the Torah really seems to be giving is physical brachas. V'yitim l'chol u'kim mitala shemayim, the pasuk tells us. U'mishmane ya'aretz. We're offering what's the bracha that Esav's going to get. He's going to get the tala shemayim, which the facts of the aretz. Roiv dozon v'sirash. He'll have much grain, he'll have wine. Yavducha amin, he'll be in charge, he'll be the king. Yishtach l'umim, he'll be in charge. But it doesn't seem to be that the Ruchnius Dika Koiches, the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael, Yitzchak Avinu is giving brachas. Yitzchak knew that his tachlis was to bring out from his children Klal Yisrael. He knew he was going to have, that was the tachlis. His father was Avram, was promised by the Ribbono Shel Olam, was promised to him. And now his children are going to continue in his avoda that he developed and going to build Klal Yisrael. He doesn't seem to be offering that in the brachas to Esau. So explains the Malbim that wasn't the plan. He always understood that Yaakov was going to be the main one. However, he thought like this. Just like we find amongst Klal Yisrael at the end of the day, there's someone called Sheva Levi. Sheva Levi is the one who's the Koyanim. They do the Avodah, the Leviim, with the Mishoris in the Beis HaMikdash. And then Klal Yisrael has to go and give them Trumas and Maestris and Matnas Kahuna. Is within Klal Yisrael different roles that we play. Certain people in Klal Yisrael, their role was to be the Oivdei Hashem totally, and there were other people around them who are going to go and help them and support them and give them Matnas Kahuna. So explains the Malbim, that was Yitzchak's plan, is set up between Esav and Yaakov. He said, Yaakov is the Yoshev Olam, is the Ishtam. Let Yaakov Avinu and all his descendants just be Isaac and Avodas Hashem totally. And let's leave the whole role of the Olam Hazeh to the one who's suited for that. Let's leave it for Esav, and we'll have Esav here to help Yaakov. And Yaakov could totally dedicate his life to Avodas Hashem. And Esav, who as we're saying is the Lashon HaSiyah, is the one who's Isaac and Olam Hazeh. Let him go and provide for Yaakov. And it will be a beautiful setup of two brothers, both serving the Ribbono Shel Olam, as obviously Esav then will have a tremendous tachlis, as he's going to be the one to help Yaakov do his Avodas Hashem. It will be much easier for Yaakov to do his Avodas Hashem with his brother Esav helping him. And that was Yaakov's plan, Yitzchak's plan, in giving the brachas to Esav. And that's why he gave him the physical brachas, which is very understandable based on, as we said before, that was really Esav's idea, and his roles was Olam Hazeh. So what was the machloikas? Where did Rivka hold not? Rivka held that even Esav couldn't fulfill this role. This role of being the one to provide for Yaakov and let Yaakov be totally Isaac. And Avodas Hashem, Esav wasn't up to that calling. Because as we explained before, Esav was an Olam Hazeh person. He could have taken that two ways. He could have taken it where he's going to use the Olam Hazeh, the physical koichus that he had, and try to use it to help Yaakov to develop ruchnius, even if he's not the Yoshev Olam, but he'll use whatever he has from Olam Hazeh to help the Yaakov. But Esav veered the wrong way, and Esav didn't develop himself that way, and Esav became, as we explained before, the person that was just the Vayoichel Vayesh, Vayokum Vayelech, that's all he was, that's all he was able to think about was his Olam Hazeh, and he was Vayivez Esav at the Bechayra. He belittled anything more than that, he couldn't deal with anything more than that. So therefore Rivka held that Esav wasn't really, wasn't fitting to be the one to support Yaakov, supply Yaakov, because it's not going to work. The only way that Esav would be able to fill that role if he understood what his tachlis was to help Yaakov and develop the ruchnius, then he could go and use his physical koiches, his physical olam hazeh, loshen asiyah, Esav, the one who is nigma, he could use it and channel it towards Yaakov. But Rivka said, no, Esav is never going to play that role. He's only going to be thinking about the olam hazeh, and it's all going to be his whole involvement by Yoichel Vayesh, and he's never going to be able to develop to help Yaakov. So we have to knock Esav out of the whole scene. We have to distance Esav, and Yaakov's going to have to play both roles. Yaakov's going to have to play both roles. He's going to have to be Oisik and Oilam Azeh and Oilam Aboy. He's going to have to do the Gashmis and the Ruchnis. He can't go and rely on his brother Esav to take care of the Gashmis for him because it's not going to work. He's not going to be able to perform the role as he should. And therefore, Rivka held that Esav has to be pushed away from the scene, and it has to be just Yaakov. Yaakov can be the only one. It has to be totally Yaakov. And that's why Rivka pushed Yaakov into take the brachas of Esav, that even Esav's brachas to develop his Olam Hazeh has to be totally under the shlita of Yaakov, and it can't be Esav at all. So this is the lesson from this week's parasha, the fundamental difference between Esav and Yaakov, and as we said before, that's our avodah, to try to understand this difference, that Esav is sort of living for the moment, is just focusing on Vayoichel Vayesh, Vayokum Vayelech. He doesn't see past, the Ramban says he can't see past the present, he doesn't want to develop himself, he doesn't want to think about his future, he's just Lashon Asiya, he's finished, he's total, he's like a little baby who can't think past the present moment and his physical needs. And Yaakov is the one, the soif, the one who's developing, like the Kliyoka says, ma'at ma'at, slowly, one day at a time, step by step. He's constantly trying to develop himself, always thinking about the soif, always thinking about where things are heading. And that's the madrega that we should try to reach. Have a good Shabbos.